Welcome to an exciting evening of Jewish parenting. Those of you who are from Yavne and those of you who are new to Yavne, welcome to Yavne Academy. I'm Elaine Weisfeld, and I'm the General Studies Associate Principal, grades 1 through 5. It's my pleasure to introduce Gila Zielinger. Gila is a clinical social worker. She works at the Family Care Center in Muncie. She has many years of experience working with individuals, families, groups. She supervises both social workers and social work interns. She gives many parenting workshops for OU and for other groups in her community. Her goal, of course, is consistently on strengthening the Jewish family. She's in private practice in Wesley Hills and leads a psychotherapy group for mothers and for couples. Those of us who have raised children know how important their social lives are to them, and obviously then to us. And Mrs. Zielinger is going to speak about how to help your child negotiate the bumps and hurdles of his or her social life. It's my pleasure to introduce her.
Thank you very much. Do we need the microphone? It's like,
do you hear me this way?
No.
No.
Okay, I guess it's my loss.
I have
an outline I'm just going to pass around so that you can follow what I'm saying. Keep me honest, make sure I do everything I'm supposed to. Mrs. Weisfeld introduced me so formally, I was getting nervous looking around where Mrs. Zielinger was. My name is Gila. I worked for many years in the Muncie community, working with children, families, adults. I was told today to discuss my child's social life in and out of school, how to help your child negotiate the bumps and hurdles in his and her social life. I was also given the unofficial topics of what I'm supposed to cover. What I would like to do before we start is to just quickly go around the room and just tell me the ages of your children so that I can make sure that we're focusing appropriately. We're supposed to be targeting middle school. If you could just tell me, like, the top, if it's 8, 7, 6. Some people are nodding no. Excuse me?
Lower school.
Okay, so that's what I'd like to know. So let's just go around quickly and just tell me the ages of your children so that I can make sure that we are targeting the right topic.
My grandchildren, 9 and 12.
Okay.
7, 9, and 13. 10 and under.
We're all on the same page. First, what I'd like to say is obviously parents want their children to have wonderful social lives. Parents want kids to be liked by other children. They want their children to be well-behaved, to share, to cooperate, and to resist the influences, to be aggressive, and to become defiant of authority. Most parents, these are their greatest concerns about their children. And how it interacts with their life often has to do a lot with your own experiences, what you were like as a child, and also what you look at your child and what your dreams are for them and what your concerns are for them based on their personalities and what you know about them. So each of you are coming with your own concerns about your own individual child, what to expect and how to bring out the best in their possible social life. Now we have two areas of social lives. We have the school and we have our home. And you can affect a little bit more change in your home because it's an environment that you can watch and see what's going on, and a little bit less in school. So we're going to talk a little bit about where you can affect the most change. when to get involved in school situations, when it's best not to. My rule in general is less is more. The more you can have your children kind of dictate their own socialization and their skills and learn on their own, and even if they're going to be hurt in the process, it's usually better. But we'll go through a couple of things. There's a big difference between social life for children. There's two things. There's children that are popular, and there's children that have friends. And the most important thing that we have to realize is friendship is the most important thing for a child to have and to hold as they get older. Kids about 5-6 years old start negotiating their friends. Of course, obviously, even at 2, but, you know, real friendships become a little bit more viable at 4 and 5. And issues start coming up at that age also. One thing that's very important for us to understand, especially at young ages, because everybody's talking about 5, 6, 7, 8, is when you're having children over, try and have only one child over. Try not to have big parties over. You can negotiate and see a little bit more about how your own child is interacting if you have one friend. If you mix the dynamics and start having 2 friends and then there's 3 kids over, it's hard to see exactly where your child is holding in terms of their socialization. But popularity is not something that we have to focus on that's most important. Most important is to see that our children can make friends and keep friends. Not necessarily the friends that you're picking out for them because you think that they are the ones that are the best match, but friends that are meaningful to your child. You also have to understand that a child's temperament has a lot to do with how they make friends. Everybody here, many people have more than one child in their family, and you'll look immediately and say, this child is more sociable, this child is a little bit more comfortable with people, this child is a little bit more shy naturally. You have to understand your child's temperament. If we can't understand their temperament and what they're more inclined to be comfortable with, then we're going to be promoting things that are not really comfortable for them, and we're not going to be of any help as parents. So you have to understand what their temperament is, what they're capable of doing, and what they have limitations. And as parents, we want to know how to teach our children and give them the most information possible. So we're going to move down to parental involvement. What can we do as a parent to try and improve our children's social skills? The most important thing that you can really do first is look at yourself and look at what it is that you want out of your child and really be honest. Most parents want more for their children than what they had as a child. And most parents, and most adults, I should say, look back at their childhood and are reminded of the few horrific experiences they may have had, and they're by for sure not going to allow their children to have those negative experiences. Whether it was something that happened once or twice, or whether it was an ongoing bullying or something that may have happened. So unless you're identifying a certain specific quality about your child that you are not happy with, whether they're aggressive or extremely shy, or a bully, or being bullied, victimized, if it's just your average child without a specific issue that you need to address, you want to make sure you're protecting your child from those things, and also that your child does have friends and does do well in school. So the important thing you have to understand as a parent is that children need to experience and make mistakes and learn these things. I always give the example to people, even adults, that as parents, if we're going to try and protect our children from everything, which many parents do, they recognize, oh, this kid's not good for you, or that one, oh no, that let's try and not make play dates with that child, or this one's a bad influence, and you know, this kid comes, your child comes home and is off the wall and is crazy after a day of playing with that one. And if we're consistently restricting our children, we're also not allowing them to evolve and to develop the coping skills to deal with regular people. And I always give the example of, you know, when you're all grown up and you move in and you have a neighbor next door to you that's a very difficult person to get along with, if all your life your mother protected you from dealing with people like that, you're going to be at your wit's end living next to a neighbor like that as an adult. And how we learn these skills is when we're young and when we have more resilience and we're able to cope better, we understand how to deal with difficult neighbors, I say. So you have to look at it as you're training your child how to become an adult that can live in a community and in a neighborhood with all different sorts of personalities and cope well. So protecting your child by limiting different friendships and and limiting different relationships with other people and limiting negative and bad experiences and protecting them from being hurt, you're really not allowing them to develop to the scope that they need to develop in order to function better. So that's a very important thing to understand. Less is more, like I said. I think it's important that we understand that we tend to want to get over-involved as parents because we do know our children better than most. And I think it is important to state that if you do know something about your child that would be helpful for a teacher to know, then by all means call the teacher, because that is a good time, especially in the beginning of the year, to prompt them and tell them what they should look out for. If your child needs to sit in the front, if your child has specific issues with friends, if your child tended to become victimized a lot or get bullied because they had a very easygoing nature or they were very small or whatever the specific issue might be. But also realize that that teacher is the advocate for the entire class and not necessarily becoming somebody that's calling on a weekly basis and bothering the teacher. The best advice, and the school didn't tell me to say this, I'm not here on their behalf, but the best advice I always tell parents is see your teachers as your partners and agree with them. Because most teachers I've worked with really don't change their mind or their direction from one smart parent, no matter how smart that parent is. They have a certain direction, and if you can try and relate to them in the way that they understand your child, whether it's completely accurate or not, you're much better off in terms of results for your child to get through to them. And what's important is the information they need to know that might be able to affect a more positive change for your child in that classroom or in the school environment. I think this school seems very parent-friendly from what I've seen. There are people that are involved other than the teachers to speak to, and I don't think it's important to flood them with phone calls, but if you do have a specific issue that you need to speak to your school about, then by all means, I think it's important. But you also have to weigh it with allowing your child the freedom to get past what they need to with their development. Usually what we do as a parent is we identify our child as having a specific issue. Socially, let's say a child is shy, for example. So if you're identifying your child as shy, you're not always doing them the best of service to go and tell everybody, my child is shy, the teacher, my child is shy, my friends, could you please send your kid over because my child is shy, because you're allowing your child to own that shyness and it to become a self-fulfilling prophecy. And it's almost important to say to yourself, you know what, you're going through a shy stage. And I would almost phrase it like that. You're going through an aggressive stage. This is not who you are and who defines you. This is a stage of growth, which is important because we are talking about a stage of development. And honestly, the social development of children is one of the most important indicators of their success later in life. So it's not something I'm trying to minimize, but I want people to see it as a stage, just like my next speech is about adolescence. And the most important thing to see about teenagers is understanding it as a stage. Because if we identify what our kids are going through as who they are, we're limiting their growth and we're not allowing them to get past it or to try out different things and to see what they're like. Especially if we over-identify with our children with something that might be similar to ourselves. So if we were also shy, for example, and then that child is shy and you're saying, yeah, I was also shy as a kid, so I am concerned because I know that I had a hard time making friends. And then it's very confusing for the child because here there's a positive thing because you're identifying with them and this is their mom or their dad who's saying something that's familiar. And you're also kind of getting them stuck in that situation and you're also over-identifying to the point where they might not be able to make changes. So I think it's important to understand that small piece. I have here next personal dreams. We have to understand when we look at each of our children, you have dreams for each of those children, and you could be very right and real, but that does not necessarily mark the path that they're going to go on, and you have to be careful with hoping for them certain things that might not necessarily be in their best interest, especially social skills. Developing social skills is really developing a confidence that you can move with relationships, feel good about yourself, feel confident in a group, not get overly not get overly exposed to other people and their opinions and then necessarily fall into traps, peer pressure, etc., even at 5 years old, 6 years old, 8 years old, and 10 years old, where they wouldn't want to be. Obviously, the best way to deal with that is through better communication skills with parents, which we'll talk about a little bit, which is some basic techniques. The more your kids can come home and talk to you and feel that you're going to listen to them without being judgmental, the better off your child is. And parents, as we'll get to later, can be coaches to their children and teach them how to assess their different limitations and how to work on skills to overcome at the child's request. So the more you have open communication, if your child comes home and says, you know, I'm so shy, I can never make friends, or I'm not comfortable, as opposed to you saying, you know, why are you sitting there and reading all afternoon? You should be out playing football. You shouldn't be out reading the whole day. You need to have more friends. How do we do that? If you have open communication, you speak to your child and see what are they unhappy about what they're doing? Is it something that's a problem or is it not a problem? We need to be able to teach our kids resilience. Resilience really is defined by the ability to withstand hard times. So if our kids don't have the resiliency, as we've been saying, they're not going to be able to function better as they go into the high school years, where cliques and peer pressure really take over and have a lot of pressure on our children. So we really have to be able to give them the stability and the security and the knowledge to know that they can move on and have the secure knowledge and self-esteem to trust in themselves and trust in their own worth. Awareness. We want to teach our children an awareness about what they are capable of or they aren't. Obviously, some children are more capable than others, and some children have less issues with being social than others. I think most parents can kind of take a step back and look where your children are socially and honestly and try and get an idea if a child tends to be a little bit more aggressive or assertive, if a child tends to be a little bit shy, or if a child tends to bully. But we also have to understand that practicing, children should actually have a little bit of each piece as they're going through these stages. You want your child to have an assertive relationship with somebody and an aggressive relationship with somebody, and then be able to communicate either with you or within that friendship, and then to move on. So most important is seeing this as a process and a learning experience, that children are going to try and flex their muscles and learn how to be a different kind of person. I'm sure everybody here in the audience has different kinds of friends. You have the friend that you talk to when you need the support, and the friend that you like to shop with, and the friend that you like to go shoot a basketball with, and the friend that, you know, not necessarily does every friend fit every single piece that you have in your life and all of your needs. And recognizing that as an adult is a very wonderful, healthy thing when you start, especially when you're married and as couples, you say, well, you know, we can go out with these friends. We have fun to go out with this friend. This friend's more, you know, for support. This friend is more like when we have issues, we like to speak to this friend. And there's a very wonderful feeling about that and recognizing that. So teaching your kids an awareness about different friends. Oh, that's a very nice friend to have over, but you tend to get into fights. Do you want to have that friend over? Are you ready for a fight? Can you handle it? Yeah, I don't mind. It's a long Shabbos afternoon. I want to have them over anyway. Okay, but realize that this might happen. Giving your child an awareness of it allows them to be able to deal with it better, too. And not to get so scared of it. Not like, oh, we can't have that kid over. Last time that kid came over, we wrecked the house. Much better to say, hey, when you guys played last time together, the house was upside down and inside out. Do you think it's a good idea to play in a playroom when that kid's here? Or maybe you should bring, like, one toy at a time out. Or maybe you should just play outside ball, or maybe you should go over to that child's house because this is what happened before. And then listen to your child to speak back and forth so that they have an awareness of what tends to happen, so it doesn't become something where you have to then isolate them. In general, my feeling, and I even mean this to the extremes, because I advocate that friendships are more important than the negativity that might come out of the friendships. Even negative friendships, even negative influences, if you have open communication with your kids, it's more important that they experience these friendships, because life is out there, life is tough, they're exposed to things where you can't really protect them from. So the more communication you have with your children and you're able to talk about the different things, the better off that you are, that your child will be able to throw these things back to you and that things won't scare you, whether it might be a difficult friend or a friend's friend. One of the big issues that come up are your friends' children in two ways. Sometimes you have friends and you would just love the children to be friendly. And oftentimes when parents are friendly, so there becomes issues when their kids don't necessarily get along. We have to be careful not to push those relationships too much on our children as well. Even though it might sound like wonderful, you're all friends, you're all neighbors, you're all together. And the same goes the other way. You have to be careful that you don't disallow your children certain friendships because you are aware that the neighbor's child is difficult, or when your child is with that neighbor's child, he becomes difficult or she becomes difficult. So in the same way, it goes both ways. Expectations. We must have realistic expectations of our kids. It's important to really understand what is normal for different ages and what is normal with friendships. It's not normal for 8-year-olds and 10-year-olds, necessarily everyone in the class, to become the most popular, to negotiate friendships all the time. Every good friend fights. We have to be oh so careful not to say negative things about our friend, because the enemy today is the best friend tomorrow. So as parents, you have to be so careful not to overly discuss the attributes of the friends. Oh, that one, oh, they're so spoiled, I don't want you to be friendly with them. And then this becomes an underlying piece that makes your children uncomfortable with that friend. And that friend might be the quote-unquote most popular person in the class that that child needs to kind of get along with for their possible growth. And again, if we see this as a continuous growth and a wait for them to learn and grow and express themselves over time, you don't have to get as dramatic and frightened over the specific techniques they're learning in their friendships. If you say to yourself, all right, at the end of the day, you look to your spouse and you say, I guess our child is learning how to be a bully now. Now, that doesn't mean that you're sitting down saying, way to go, I'm glad you're doing bully well. But if you say, you know, we weren't really so proud of your behavior, but I guess that sometimes people can't control themselves, and this is what happens, and you have to learn how to control yourself better, and next time you'll be better. And then you look to yourselves when you're finished speaking to your child, and you say, okay, now they were in that situation, so that when they get bullied or they're victimized by somebody, you'll be able to say, hey, you remember that you were that person last year, and maybe you can tend to forgive the person that's bullying you now. So we have to see this as all these attributes and characteristics are things that our kids have to learn. And as parents, we can't be scared of them. We tend to get very reactive. I don't like that about my child. We tend to be very perfectionistic. And there's nothing wrong with that as parents. It makes sense, but it's not in the best interest of your child. And understanding that mistakes are made are for learning, and children will be making those mistakes, and the children should look back to us. And our motto should be, hey, you made a mistake, and mistakes are okay. That's how we learn. We learn from our mistakes, and you'll do better next time. I put together some the topics that said bumps and hurdles. I wrote down a couple of things that I thought were bumps and hurdles to negotiating one's positive social life. We discussed shyness, but like fights, cliques, peer pressure, shyness, and specific friendships. Does anybody have anything other that might be an issue that we can discuss, or any other questions till now that I could take? Yeah.
You know what? Could you just
how to lose gracefully in game? How do you teach your child to lose gracefully in a game?
Well, the first thing I'd like to say, which reminds me, is that's a great question. Do the parents lose gracefully at home? I think the first way to teach a child how to lose gracefully is through modeling losing to your children. And even if you never lose and you can have everything down pat and perfect, so then pretend to lose once in a while and to lose gracefully. That's a great question. And the answer really is, let's see. Okay, not here.
It's just a bump and hurdle.
Yeah, bump and a hurdle, right. Okay, I don't know. You want to see what this is? I'll keep going. The answer is here. The best way for this age children is by playing games with them.
Let me see if it's in there.
No problem. I got my way, you see. One second, I'll just take a drink. One of the best things to do as parents at this age is to play games with your kids. And inevitably you're going to lose. I don't believe in making your children win in general. I don't think that makes sense. I think they probably look and say, gosh, Ma, how could you lose to me? So many years of playing Monopoly and you're losing, something's got to be wrong. But talking about, it's not about losing, it's about the playing. So playing games really helps your kids know how to lose gracefully because you talk about it. And many kids throw the board over and do that. And in terms of dealing with it, and why did you do that? And then the game got ruined and you want to play again. Last time you threw the board over. So it's not always going to be perfect, but in general, playing games with your kids teaches a lot about how to function better and how to have them function and negotiate with their friends. In fact, playing any games with your kids enables you to have a small eye into what goes on with your kids with other friends because they can't mask it. How they play with their friends is going to be how they play with you. So if you're really not sure how your kids are getting along with other friends, or if somebody keeps calling, I'm sure people have this, and you hear something about your child and you're saying, that's not my kid. My kid's so great at home. They do this at home and they don't do that at home. And the teacher keeps saying this, or my neighbors keep saying that they're so difficult. Sit down and play with your child, whether it's a board game or whether it's house or whether it's a basketball outside or whatever you might need, whatever your child's into. If you play what your child likes to play, you will see traits come out in your child and natural traits that other people see, and it'll help you see them a little bit more clearly. So that's a great question, and that's basically, in general, how to do that. And to model, one piece that I kind of missed, we're getting to it, with parenting is who we are. I don't want to turn this. Everybody likes to come to these programs because it's about, you know, things about our children. So it makes it a little bit easier to bear. Let's go to hear a parenting thing, how we can be better parents and deal with the social issues of our children. I don't think many people would have come out tonight if we talked about look at your own skills and look at your own social skills and see how you are socially and with your friends in order to understand how to better affect your kids. But that really is the underlying, if you have to leave here with one tip. Really, you have to look at your own skills and look at how children see your own skills, not what you mask and pretend to them, but the reality of, you know, let's have someone over for lunch. I don't really feel like it. I hate having your friends for lunch. Or what's going on behind the scenes that the kids are picking up on and they hear. And that's also affecting a lot how they're negotiating their social life in school. So we have a little bit here about, I'm just going to run through it and I'll go back afterwards if I have time. We have a little bit about fights, what goes on with fights with children, kids having fights. Basically, I want everybody to know that fights are normal. You're supposed to have fights, not as adults necessarily. All right, that's not something that necessarily should be modeled. I don't think that as adults and as parents, we should be fighting with our friends on a daily basis. But kids definitely have fights, and if we see it as normal and the kids come home and we're not so dramatic, what happened? What'd they say? How could they say that? And you're on the phone in 3 seconds getting the story straight. You're making much more of a fight than it has to be. And you'd be surprised how quickly children forget and how quickly they're very resilient and how it doesn't have to become something. Sometimes it becomes something when a parent makes it an issue much more than it necessarily has to be. It's important also to solve and move on and understand that these things can happen. Cliques, for example. Cliques, especially with girls, little girls, but younger boys also get into cliques, whether it's sport cliques for boys or whether it's the girls can be very difficult. There's the queen bee girl, the one that's in charge, and then there's the queen bee. It's working?
Okay. Oh, okay. I had a little. There's different parts and parcels to a clique. I once gave an extensive workshop about a clique. It's a difficult thing. There's the very popular one. There's the girl that's next to the popular one. There's the sidekick. There's the target, the person that everybody in the clique targets, and everybody has to target them, and woe to your child if they become the target of a clique. But cliques are inevitable, and cliques also teach children a lot about life. They teach kids about how things work and power and distribution of power, and also coping skills and how to get by with a clique and how to survive. So it's not important that your child necessarily be in the clique, but it's important that they can survive the clique. Again, talking about it, mastering the understanding, okay, this person's in the clique, this person likes to be in charge. Talking to your kids about what the different needs are, that kids are like that, for what reason, what's behind the cliques. Peer pressure, even at 5 and 6, we already feel great peer pressure, and I think that's a lot because parents feel peer pressure. They feel pressure for their young boys to already be into sports, they feel pressure for the girls and boys to be, you know, acting a certain way, and even gracious. I mean, we expect certain graciousness from our children in terms of their relationship, and that they should be allowing other friends to come over and join in their friendships, and
because we as adults may do that as adults, and we have a lot of expectations on kids. There are some risk factors that you look at your children, you see for peer pressure, kids that have low self-esteem often fall, a lack of confidence, uncertainty about where they are in terms of a peer group, especially if you've recently moved or switched their classes or a friend has moved away. So if kids are susceptible, we have to be careful with that. You know, kids that have poor academic ability sometimes are susceptible. Some kids that fear other friends, fear specific friends in the class or just feel very uncomfortable. Kids that have a close bond with a bully, bullies that start up with those kids. So most important here is to practice with your kids. If you know that there's a lot of peer pressure in an environment, you've got to talk it out with them. Talk about values, talk about clothing status, even at 7 and 8. Talk about how these things are not really important. Talk about how we all make it so much more important. Talk to them about how you like them in their Lacoste t-shirt, but really it's just the stupid little alligator, what is it? And you have to talk to them about these values because they don't really understand. When you want them to look good when they're going to a birthday party and you ask them to dress a certain way, you're expressing to them a value in something that even in your own head, if you don't believe it, they don't really understand. So you might say, well, I want you to wear that outfit because I really like it and it's you look so much nicer in it. But I can't stand that I'm falling to all this pressure about a silly little label or about an outfit that's nicer. Talk to your children so that they understand at a young age so that they don't make the same valueless judgments without understanding what's in your head. Because you're modeling to them certain things that you want them to be a certain way, but you have to go one step further and practice with them the reasoning behind why you make these decisions. We also want to try and teach our children to think of themselves as a leader. And talk to them about it in school. How would you be if you were in charge of the clique? And how would you make things different? And what would it be if you felt more comfortable with this person? What would you do? Because practicing with your kids at home allows them to practice it in their own environment. Even if you're just talking theoretically to your kids about these different pieces, it gives them strength and it allows them to kind of play it out in their mind and wonder if this is something that they could try and do. So that's very important and probably one of the most important things to do with your children is to talk to them about what's going on in your head. Remember, if it's going on in your head, somehow subconsciously, you're bringing it out in your kids and they hear it and they feel it. If you're worried, hi Frank, if you're worried about it and if you have concerns, then they have concerns. They're picking it up. So talk to them about it. Let them know how you're feeling. Say, I'm really worried about you. I think that, you know, today you guys were a little bit mean to that, you know, friend of yours that was over here. They're just new, and I invited them over because they just moved into the neighborhood. And talk to your kids about it. What is it about new kids and whatever the issue might be? And you'd be surprised, young children and older children, if they hear that you're concerned about it and you're just asking them. You're not telling them what to do or what not to do. It can have a much greater effect. When you speak to teachers, you'll find out that kids come back into school with all these different things, and parents, if they speak to their teachers, the teachers can tell you what the parents spoke about their kids the night before, because the kids come in and practice what their parents were talking about. As opposed to telling your kids, you can't do this, or tomorrow do this, if it's a theoretical conversation about what might have been or what you could do, kids tend to come in and try and practice it to see if it works. Shyness also. You want to look out for kids that are constantly harassed or criticized. You know, you want to look out for overprotective parents. Overprotective parents often produce shy children. You want to look into the heredity of it. Sometimes, you know, kids are shy, you're shy. And have realistic expectations about your kids. If you guys don't tend to be the most social butterflies, and you feel in life, you know, maybe it would have been better for us to have been a little bit more social, things would have been easier. My kids are going to be much more social. And you don't look at your child and see what their inclinations are, you're putting them into a situation where you're setting them up to fail, and that's dangerous because you want to be realistic about what to expect of them and you want to talk to them. Much better would be, hey, you know, when we were your age, we were also really, really shy, and all these years we really wish that we could practice being less shy when we were young so it could be more natural when we were older. And like, maybe you can do that. What do you think? And talk to your child about it and be honest and just say, you know, we don't want you to end up like us, where we feel like we can't have, you know, we're not the party, we don't party with all the friends, we're a little bit more isolated. We want you to be more comfortable. And you'd be surprised, little children could understand and could say, well, you know, I could do this or I could do that. And you'll start talking to the kids about what they can handle at their level. oftentimes as parents, we're looking at the end result. If you're looking at a child who's 8 or 10 or 5 or 15, they might not be ready yet for the stage that you want them to be in. They might just be developing skills. And it's important to develop those skills before you throw them in and tell them what it is that they're supposed to be doing or not doing. And lack of consistent parenting, that's also difficult. You can't be inconsistent about what your expectations are for your children in school or around. It's not fair for them. You can't have a different style of dealing with them every time you sit down and talk to them. And if you do, or if you change your style, like you went to a parenting group and you decide you like that style, tell them, we went to a parenting group. We are trying a different style. You'd be surprised that kids can handle that a lot better when they think like it's some sort of Jekyll and Hyde. I mean, yesterday I was in timeout, and today I'm going, I have incentives with stickers, like, what's going on? My parents are going crazy. And they can understand it a lot more, saying, hey, we're just trying our best. We're looking around to see how to do a better job as raising you, how to be better parents, and we're trying different things. I mean, my kids have this all the time. Every time I research different topics, they look at me like, oh boy, what's this topic? You know, because they know inevitably from whatever I research, I come home and I say, hey guys, let's talk, you know, what's going on with this or what's going on with that? So they just find it comical. They just want to make sure they know what it is that I'm working on. Next. Any questions? Your child is not comfortable making the actual telephone call?
Phone shy.
Phone shy.
You won't call anybody on the phone. Mom can call.
It's a girl or a boy?
I have it
both ways. I was just going to say, you know, usually if it's a girl, enjoy it while you have it. Keep the phone, hide it. But I think I'm not the be-all, end-all on giving out advice for a question, but in my opinion, I would not make an issue of that. I don't really understand why anyone would make an issue of that. If a child's a little uncomfortable on the phone, why not make the call for them? Like, what's that about? Why does the child have to make that phone call? Okay, so, and I would say that. You know what, I'm going to make the call for you now because you say you're uncomfortable. As you get older, I think you should make the phone call. Exactly what you're thinking. Say, you know, I really would rather not make this phone call, but, you know, bottom line is you want your child to be, what would you rather? You can't have that friend over until you make that phone call. That's not really the point here. The point is not, if your child was destined for making phone calls for the rest of their life and going to be a receptionist, I'd be working on it very carefully. But who knows what this child's going to end up doing, especially in a computer age of today. Some people are not comfortable on the phone. Some people are really not. And you know, when they have their cell phones, you'll be very happy. But I would say, you know, this is something that you have to work on, obviously. You have to be able to make that call. How about I do it? Or how about I get the child on the phone as you do it, and then you speak after I have the child on the phone? Could you do that? And then maybe you can ask, and you can isolate what it is about calling. They might be uncomfortable. Some kids are uncomfortable speaking to adults. Some kids are just not savvy on the phone. And work towards it. But I wouldn't make them do something that would make them a little bit more anxious, especially when it comes to socializing.
Specifically in the area of shyness, is that a quality that we want to discourage in our children? In other words, shouldn't we just be accepting them for who they are and working around and dealing with them rather than trying to change them and forcing them into situations that, or encouraging them to do things that we necessarily because we want it for them. We don't want them to be shy, but that's who they are right now.
Should we
be forcing them to change their nature?
Okay, so you're saying, should we force shy children not to be shy? Isn't that something in and of itself? I agree with you. I think that if the only reason shyness is a problem, and I put it here as a problem per se, is if it leads to low self-esteem, lack of friendship, and withdrawal of socializing. Not because being somebody that's, we're using the word shy in terms of its negative effects. We're not saying somebody that's soft-spoken and is a problem. Somebody that is actually shy, we're saying in a place where they might do better to be more outspoken, they're not. So that's what we're focusing on. But you're right, it's not necessarily a character flaw that somebody's a little bit more shy, unless they're not getting their needs met and they're not furthering their social development. And many times with children it is a problem. That's why we identify it. Many times with adults it's not a problem. It might be a problem that socially people think it's not so good to be shy. I don't know why that's a problem, so long as they're meeting everything that they're supposed to be doing. But in terms of developing, a shy child is more at risk if they are not expressing their needs more. And you'll see, as a parent, you can make such a big difference in communicating with your child in terms of being shy. Most important, by awareness. Hey, I think you're shy. Yeah, I think I am shy. Well, what is that shy making you do or not do? You know, and are you getting your needs met? And if you can help them making sure that they're not being overlooked because they're shy, well, then there's absolutely nothing wrong with being shy. I think it's a beautiful thing. Why do we want outspoken people that are opinionated? But that's you know, that's much harder to work with also. You have an outspoken, opinionated person, that's much harder to get them a little shy. Yes?
You mentioned something about the alligator when the children worship labels. We had a problem with drugs, where kids are obsessed with it. My wife finally gave in and bought it for her, but the children looked behind it to make sure it had the UGG or the counterfeit.
I know. I bought my kids one from Costco. That was horrible.
Well, if I try to explain the difference between value and reasonableness and quality and a label over a content. Still doesn't work.
It doesn't work.
Is there anything, and now we're up to juicy couture. Is there
good luck.
Anything that you can give me a little guidance on?
Survival?
No, of other ways to try to explain that looking for reasonable value,
right.
You buy an Avalon instead of a Lexus,
right.
The appearance.
So how
to try to explain.
How to promote good values.
Yeah, that you don't need the
in
best
a world
label.
That's label conscious.
Right, as long as it has quality and its reasonable value. It's not a crime to buy at Sims.
Right. I think, how old is the children that you're speaking about? Okay, so teenagers or tweenagers, as they call them, because they come really young now. They say 8, 9, they're already tweenagers. This is something that's actually quite healthy for the kids to develop through, again, as a stage. So if we see this as a stage, it's not as threatening. You're looking at this child and saying, oh my gosh, the kid's going to want a BMW when they're 18.
Right.
And, you know, they're not going to want some used Ford or, you know, and be happy that I can even get them a secondhand car. And that's the danger. When we look at what the children are doing, it's very normal to succumb to peer pressure and the advertisements today and the world and what's out there. It's almost unusual to find a child that's not affected at some level. And I don't think that that's necessarily endemic in our parenting skills or in the character of our children. I think that's out there. And I think as parents, we suffer from it as well. We might have different priorities, and we might believe certain things are, we're more comfortable with certain things than other things. Like you might be able to forego your label for something that you know is just as good quality without the label, but that's something you've developed over time. And I think that by telling your children what you think and them understanding and say, look, right now you're really into this stuff, and I really hope that you see beyond the label that you see and that you can recognize, again, awareness, that's the most important thing, that your kids learn from you that there's an awareness to what's going on. It's not just that the Juicy Couture name is the most important thing, but all right, look, you want that juicy thing. You realize you can get 4 sweatshirts in 4 different colors instead of that one that's the way you want it, but that's the one that you want. Believe me, the other 4 would be meaningless to your child, and that's the one that they want. They only want that one with that certain label. You say, okay, this is your money. I'm going to allow you to spend it. I just want you to realize what you are succumbing to. Do you realize what's going on around you? Are you thinking clearly? And allowing your child that kind of freedom is also giving them the power and the knowledge to be able to go past that. And as adults, struggle as everybody here struggles with, you know, trying to see what it is that society and the culture wants us to have and what we believe is important, as well as understanding beyond, is there really intrinsic value in that thing? Is that thing so important? So I don't think that the success in parenting is that your child says, I am boycotting Juicy and Lacoste and et cetera. I don't think that's necessarily the evidence of success. But in their mind, if you've got it working, saying, yeah, it's true, gosh, I got this Juicy thing, I'm much happier with it, but I would have been able to get 4 sweatshirts otherwise, but I didn't want to, that awareness in and of itself is a very important teaching moment and the best we can hope for in the process of parenting and going on.
Thank you.
Teaching resilience, if you can elaborate a little bit. I feel a little confused about this subject, because I, you know, if you have very sensitive children, is that considered being resilient if they have an interaction and then they come home and they're upset, but they deal with it? Is that what you mean by resilience?
That's what I mean by teaching resilience. But if you have a sensitive child that's constantly coming home and crying, so then you want to deal with what's going on. Why is that child coming home and crying all of the time and being that sensitive to other people's teasing? So if there's, right, so if you have a consistent problem that is getting in the way, like how, when I have parents coming all the time to evaluate, when is something a problem? When do you need a professional? You know, so many people are going to child therapists nowadays, and not that I don't see my share of children, but I really think that the best of therapy can be done at home and working with the parents to work with the kids, because there's much more consistency. I always say the problem is, when does it get in the way of their functioning? Like I evaluate an adult. If an adult is not working because they're in bed all day and they're depressed, it's a problem. If they're making it to work and everything's going on in life is as usual, but they're feeling depressed, the depression is not as much of a problem in their functioning. If a child is coming home every day and they're crying and they can't do their homework and they have no friends and the crying is getting in the way of their functioning, which is going to school and having friends basically at this age, so then you have a problem that you have to look at more carefully. And really what it might involve is teaching children coping skills. That's not necessarily teaching resilience. To a very sensitive child that's coming home, you don't say, they're crying and they'll deal with it and they're resilient. They'll, to a degree, I don't want to over-exaggerate. If a child comes home and is in pain, we're not going to say, well, that's great. Great to be in pain. You'll be very resilient and you can live next to very mean people and function. You know, that's not going to get us anywhere. So an overly sensitive child, you have to look at is how to deal with a child that's overly sensitive. Again, talk about that with a child. You're overly sensitive. Things hurt you more. What do you do when you have that kind of pain? And I would teach a child certain coping skills to do, because what happens is it goes right into their release of tear mode. And not that there's anything wrong with crying, but if the crying is getting in the way, you need to give them something one step before that happens to do with those feelings. And that would be more how to deal with that child. Okay. I wanted to just talk about this parent as coaches. What we can do. I look at it as being a coach. A coach of a soccer team, for example, doesn't just sit around and say, good play, or, oh, that was terrible, bad play. They sit with the child and they say, you know, what could be done to make their situation better. You know, you can hit from this angle and you can try this, or how about some push-ups at night? And that's how we have to look at ourselves as coaches. I have to find, hold on one second. Okay. We have to look at what we've been talking about, different signs that children have when there's problems. One way that I work out and that I teach, and I'd like to teach you a little bit so that you can go home with some skills to actually work with your kids on, is if you, obviously everybody here might be coming with a child that they have a certain concern about, whatever that concern might be, if you want to work on some specific method to deal with, to talk to your child, to communicate with your child about it, I do the PPPP, which is practice, praise, point out, and prompt way of dealing with helping our children change some sort of issue that they might be having in order to get over an obstacle of some sort of social limitation. So it could be anything from, let's say kids can be interrupting a lot or are shy or don't say what's on their mind or they take it from somebody else or whatever the issue might be. So we have different things. So we're starting off with practice. We want, by practice, we're talking about substituting a different way of dealing with it. So let's say a child, I'm going to take one example, interrupts all the time. And they do it with you, and they probably do it with their kids too. They don't sit and they don't listen to the other person, and you really feel like there's a limitation. They're not. So you might want to role play it. You want to practice with your child, not interrupting, saying, excuse me, saying, wait for your turn, and sitting down and practicing the specific thing that your child's having trouble with over and over again. The most important thing that I will tell you about this method is you cannot do it when the child succumb to it. In other words, you don't just say, there, you did it again. You know, I went to this parenting thing and I want to talk to you about doing something. Whenever you do that, this is what I'm going to do, is not the time to do it. You come home, you sit down with your child in a very positive place, you take them out to Starbucks, or you take them out to the, for candy, or you take them out for a walk in the park, and you discuss with them, you know what, I've noticed that you have a problem with X, Y, and Z, and I really want to help you, and I want to practice with it with you. And the second step is the praise. When you catch them doing it right, you do something for them. You say, I want to extend your bedtime because before I saw that you didn't interrupt and you wanted to, and you must be practicing, even if they aren't. You spend a few days constantly looking for ways to praise them so that they see that there's some sort of investment in you trying to switch their behavior. The other thing is pointing out, not just pointing out to them when they do it, but pointing out, like, look how Daddy just said that. Wasn't that great? He waited for me to speak, and then he did that. Or looking at other people, other role models, or friends, or themselves when they do it. And it's a skill that they can learn, and they can model, and they can do. And then by prompting meaning what I usually do is make up something. So whichever thing you're going to be working on, at the same time, you're going to say, look, every time this happens, I'm going to go like this with my nose. I'm going to go here. So this is something that's private between you and I. We're talking about it privately. Nobody else knows. When I do this, I'm referring to this conversation. And what this does, first of all, is the conversation that you're having is a very neutral, positive conversation, not based on the fact that your child just made a mistake or based on the fact that you just lost it and you were screaming and you finally decided to do it. It's based on, oh, yeah, that's a reminder of we were in the park that day. That was so nice, and we had that conversation, and everybody was calm. So when you bring up this, you're not saying, there you go, you're doing it again, you're interrupting. You're just going like this, and hopefully the association, the subconscious association in your child's mind is something very, very calm and not ridden with anger and frustration. So that sometimes helps. Practice and praise, point out and prompt, and having that way with children. I've found that parents have come back and told me if they've done this, in a week things have changed because there's a consistency to it. There's a certain consistency that you're constantly doing it, and you can much easier go to some sort of sign or symbol, whether it's sit up straight, stop picking your nose, stop biting your nails, to something much more important or socially influential as interrupting or becoming frustrated or going into a temper tantrum. And you can often distract your child one step before they go on to the next issue. Yeah.
When we start the practice, should we title it as we're practicing now or naturally starting a situation? I wouldn't practice.
You know, an older child, you can give them these notes. Yeah. This is what I'm supposed to do. But a younger child, I would just practice with them.
Just getting to.
Exactly. So then when this happens, you know, sometimes they don't really understand what you're talking about. You know, especially when you're trying to teach kids different behaviors, they don't really understand. And remember that socialization skills, it's not genetic, it's learned behavior. And that's really a message, I mean, that was my parting message, but that's really a message that's important. Nobody is born with a certain amount of socialization skills. Social skills are learned behaviors. So if we practice with our children and we teach them, and the same for ourselves, if you practice certain behaviors, you can change and they can change. It's not something that's necessarily genetically wired, like maybe personality traits and character traits, you see? Okay. I'm just going to sit here at the end. I don't really have to go through. I said, just run through what parents can do. We talked about trusting in the power of friendship. Friendship in and of itself is a lot more important than the fights and the issues that come with friendships. And try and meet the parents of children's friends. Have reasonable expectations about your children's social skills. Value friendship over popularity. Focus on coping and not the pain. In other words, try and focus on coping through what's going on and not like, what did they do to you? How did they do that? But how are you going to deal with that and how's that going to be different tomorrow? Ask empowering questions like, what could you do? What could you try? Only help when you're truly asked or truly needed. Try to dissect power struggles. Don't, oh, that kid's so mean. You shouldn't even play with that kid. It's terrible. He always bullies people. Try and say, hey, what gives that kid so much power that you can come home crying every single day? What's going on with that? Consider both sides of the story. Remember, your child might be on the other side of the story another time, so it's important, no matter how wonderful and perfect your child is. Separate your childhood from your child's. Try and talk to a professional or a school guidance counselor if it's an issue that you need clarification, not because your child necessarily needs therapy, but because you might need clarification on some issues and some direction. And try and identify at-risk children. I don't want to exclude kids that are loners, bulliers, frequently bullied, etc. I don't want to minimize the difficulty in dealing with that and the interventions that could be done to change that. And most of all, try and see everything as a process, as we said. This is a process of their maturing and growing up and learning new skills. And good luck. Thank you.